Hello and welcome to episode 198 of the Saints Score podcast, where we discuss everything going on at Southampton Football Club. The Saints were minutes away from moving to four wins in a row in the Championship, but were forced to settle for a draw against Huddersfield Town after a late goal from Ben Jackson. Nine unbeaten, well, that sounds pretty good still, but with Leeds drawing and Ipswich Town losing, it was so close to being a perfect weekend for Russell Martin. My name's Harry Tizard. This week I'm joined by Ollie Boast. And Ollie, how are you doing this week?
I'm very well, thank you. My voice is a little bit hoarse today. I don't know if you can hear it. I'm not ill. I've been talking to secondary school kids about going to university today. It's just really fun to see. I mean, year 11's really chill. Year 8 is absolute chaos, dude. It's crazy. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what they're feeding them at lunchtimes, but boy, those kids were feral. Trying to explain to a year 8 the concept of university as well when they've got like 3 years until they're doing their GCSEs. That was a little bit of a tough ask, but it's all right. I'm here now. I'm ready to talk to a like-minded individual yourself and not talk to you like you're a child. So I'm looking forward to some age-appropriate conversation.
Well, fantastic. But we're going to wind back the clock really quickly. How were you in year 8? Were you feral? Were you chaotic?
No.
How were you?
You didn't even know me in year 8, did you?
No, not really.
I think I knew of you. I've heard rumours.
You were in the cooler segment of the of our secondary school. I was not so.
You'd never think that now, would you? Look where we are now. Maybe, I don't know. What was I in year? I was quite quiet. I was a quiet kid. I kept to myself. I always used to get the exact same parents' evening. I don't know whether you did. My parents' evening was always the same thing. They were like, bright kid, does his homework on time, always pays attention in class, but I want to see you put your hand up a bit more. You know, you're really, really quiet in class. You're never answering the questions. And I know you know it, but you just never answer the questions. You never put your hand up. And I want to see you. And I will start picking you if you don't put your hand up. So make sure you put up your hand when you know the answers. And I got that for every single parent's evening from like year 7 to even at year 11 when I was a little bit older. No, I still wasn't putting that hand up. I was sat there refusing to answer. So that was what I was like in year 8. And then basically every other year. I'm guessing you were probably the same because I feel like we're very similar in terms of school and like energy levels and stuff. So I'm guessing you're the exact same.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though we're doing a podcast right now, we're trying to share it on TikTok, get our voices heard and all that sort of stuff. I was at the back of the class, just happy, doing all my homework on time, doing different stuff, all of that, but not ever really putting my hand up unless I absolutely knew the answer. Just that fear of getting it wrong for some reason. And then I'd whack my knee, for example, if it was no one got it. Then the teacher said, well, it was this. I was like, well, I knew that, but I didn't put my hand up just in case.
You're preaching to the choir, mate.
No, absolutely. Well, we knew that Russell Martin was going to work in the end. And you know what? He's working right now. We're 9 unbeaten, even though we only got a point against Huddersfield, who are relatively struggling at the moment. What did you make of the game on the weekend?
Well, I watched the early kickoff, which was Man City versus Liverpool, which are probably the two most exciting and strongest technical teams in England at the moment, both playing against each other. Really excited game and seeing all the tactical intricacies. And then going to Saints Huddersfield did feel like a kind of whiplash going back down to the Championship a little bit. I don't know whether you got the time to catch the early kickoff, but I did find first half we were really dominant, not very ruthless. We were on top of the game. I thought the second half was really interesting. The main takeaway I took was, what did Darren Moore say at halftime? Because Huddersfield came out like their life depended it on the second half, and they just kind of overwhelmed us. I think we were kind of in cruise control. We were really comfortable in the first half, and we were kind of expecting us just kind of pass it around them with no troubles. And Huddersfield hassled us, and they really got in our faces. And I think they did kind of knock the energy out of us a little bit. And I think we thought we'll break them down eventually, but they didn't really break down. They didn't really tire. And in fact, they put the pressure on us in the last 20 minutes, and it almost seemed like a good result near the end, getting a draw, because Huddersfield did deserve points out of that game. We just weren't good enough in the second half, and their goal was frustrating because it wasn't a show of their quality. It was just a ball in the box, and then it wrong puts the keeper and sneaks in the back of the net. So it was a bit of a frustrating way to concede, especially it being later on in the game as well. But if we're being honest with ourselves, they probably deserved it, didn't they? And I think a draw is a fair result for the game. But I think fans were feeling left disappointed because they knew we probably had the quality to take all three.
Well, I sort of step back to our secondary school days for an old cliche. It was a very Jekyll and Hyde performance from us. In the first half, I think Huddersfield only had one shot. We had 12. We were creating plenty of chances. And we weren't quite able to really put them to bed. I mean, we'll go further down the line with this sort of conversation a bit later, but I'll hit you with the big question now. Are we still waiting for that clinical away performance? You know, we've seen a couple of times, maybe against Birmingham, against Leeds, when we've gone 2-0 up, even though it's maybe been a bit tighter during the game, winning both 3-1 in the end, we sort of felt confident and comfortable at 2-0, whereas away from home, I've never really felt that comfortable in a game. All of our late winners, you know, obviously have come in the stoppage time. The games that we've won 1-0, they've been quite tense. The Stoke City ones, for example, we've not really put a team away on our travels.
No, and it's interesting you say that because commentators keep saying to us, "Oh, Southampton look like the home team here. They're dominating the game. They look like they're in control, but." We sometimes just don't have the goals to back it up. It's just the performance, the way we dominate possession. We control the game at our own pace. And I understand it. I understand what they're saying. But yeah, we haven't killed a game early away from home really this season. And I think it may be quite a high expectation to set ourselves and say, yeah, we should be killing games off away from home because they're difficult places to go to. You might think, okay, places like Millwall, we should be beating them quality-wise. But I realised, especially in the first half when we played them, how difficult it is going to be for us to get points away from home because it's completely different. Didn't Jan Bednarek call some of the Championship games rugby matches? Was that Bednarek or it was it one of our defenders? Yeah, which worries me because I was like, that's the one player you think would be the strongest and the most ruthless in the team, and even he's complaining about the physicality. So it's a little bit of a shock to these players going to these atmospheres, having these tough games away from home. So it might be a little bit of a harsh expectation, but it depends whether we want to get promoted or not, because Russell Martin's setting that expectation, the board are setting that expectation. When they're talking to the fans and communicating to us, they're saying that we're trying to get promoted back into the Premier League as quick as possible. So, yeah, okay. If our target is let's go and get promoted, then we do need to be showing our quality and getting games done early away from home.
Well, you mentioned Jan Bednarek there. He came back in replacing the man of the match, Mason Holgate from the West Bromwich Albion game. And Fraser probably got a deserved start as well. What did you make of the changes?
Yeah, we said on the last episode, what does Fraser have to do to get a start? And I think his recent performances have justified that. And I was quite excited to see both. We knew Bednarek was a solid player. It slightly went away from my don't change a winning team, but I think Bednarek in the squad has been stronger and put in a good amount of performances. And I was excited to see Fraser from the first whistle and see him play the whole 90 and see how he impacts the game. And I guess we'll get it onto a little bit later, but I think Bednarek had a good performance. I think there was definitely crucial parts where he came in handy. And I thought he made some really good challenges and interceptions, blocks, which we know that's his thing. He's just a solid defender, isn't he? He doesn't do the real fancy things. I think Holgate has the potential to play out the back better and be a more Russell Martin player, air quotes. But I think as a true defender, true natural defender, I think Bednarek has the physicalities and the kind of the talents to do that. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's a Premier League defender. And near the end of last season, our strongest defender that we had in the Premier League playing championship football. So you can see his qualities do show. And I think he's a player that deserves to play. So I had no arguments with the decisions. I think they were sensible. But yeah, did they pay off? Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, you mentioned Ryan Fraser there. What did you make of his performance overall? Because what we've seen in the last few weeks, or maybe months, in fact, that every time he's come off the bench, he's been able to make an impact. As someone that was able to watch maybe a bit more of it than I was able to, what was his all-round play like? Did he have the same level of impact as he's normally been able to?
It's very difficult. So I think he's a very kind of explosive player when he comes on, and he makes a lot happen. And he's that, the thing I keep mentioning, I've mentioned it quite a few episodes now, but he's that good, clear decision that he makes near the end of games when defenders have those tired legs. He makes the correct decisions, and it's the last thing you want as a defender, him doing the thing that you don't want him to do. I didn't see too much of him, to be honest. That might be me, just my wavering attention, and I didn't really see it. But a lot of our play, you have to understand, we were shifting. We were trying to put it in areas and try and find openings. And we did get shots off, but the main thing that I noticed was it wasn't shots on target. We were applying pressure, and we did have some shots, but we didn't really have any moments of real extended pressure, I'd say. It was just control of the game. And it might be slipping my mind now, and it might be my old age, and then 3 days ago, I can't
old
remember.
Age.
it might be, yeah, the fact I can't remember on the top of my head, but I don't really remember him having a very influential game for either of the wingers, to be honest. I think Sulemana got pulled off relatively early, and he did not look happy. I think he went straight down the tunnel. I might be making that up, actually. I'm not sure. I'll have to fact check that. But he came off early and he didn't look happy. And to be fair, we weren't that threatening. When you want something from your wingers, and I think there were definitely changes once new wingers came on as well. So it's the fortune of having a strong squad. But yeah, didn't quite have the same impact as you expected.
Well, if you look at our first half and go onto the momentum chart on SofaScore, there's one little tiny rectangle where Huddersfield had a slow part, a good part of the game, I should say. The rest of it was all us. I think Stuart Armstrong hit the bottom of the post. Sulemana's strike got deflected wide. Smallbone forced the goalkeeper into a good save as well before the goal. Adam Armstrong, it's a delightful finish after a hooked cross from Stewie. And always we seem to be talking about Adam Armstrong. But I want to talk about one of your favourites here, Stuart Armstrong. A lot of people maybe look at us getting relegated, and a lot of people wanted to leave. I think Stuart Armstrong could have been in the mix for that as well. He had a couple of difficult years, I would say, in the Premier League, and maybe didn't have the level of influence that he did when he first came. But if it was like in the Championship, he's rediscovering his best football. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't know whether you've noticed this. I think it might just be the fact that he's getting more minutes, but he doesn't look as bulky as he used to. You look at Armstrong, he's got these broad shoulders. When he runs, he's very up straight, and he just goes at the opposition, and players just kind of bounce off him as he runs. But I think he looks more springy. I think it must be the minutes that he's getting in his legs, and he's playing more often, and he looks more... I think the thing that I always used to get excited about was the fact he was direct, but the fact he had that quality of touch. And when he wasn't playing games game in, game out, his touch lacked. He didn't have that match sharpness, which I think is such an important part to his game. We know he's not particularly the quickest, but what he does is he runs at defenders and he makes them make decisions. He's also got a brilliant eye for a pass as well. But yeah, I don't know whether you've noticed that slight change in his physicality, really. He doesn't need to be as strong, which is almost counterintuitive for the Championship, but he does look a bit more springy and a bit more light on his feet.
Yeah, I think he's also just looking a lot more confident this season as he did last season. Maybe it's because the quality around him in terms of the opposition have dropped, and he can sort of have maybe more time on the ball. He can look around and can pick a better pass. He's in a team that's winning as well. Do you think that makes a big difference overall? You know, you look at the whole of our team, and maybe it's the style, maybe it's just the fact that we're winning, but the whole team just seems to be happier. I think a big part of that could be because they know exactly where they should be at any given time. You know, you look under Jones, you look under Sellers, two managers, well, especially under Jones, someone that didn't stick to his principles whatsoever, and everything was very confusing. Sellers, I don't know what that was. Obviously, after we beat Chelsea, a lot of people were thinking, let's get him in. A lot of people also didn't. We did get him in, we kept him in, and that was probably quite a big reason why we went down. Do you feel that's a big reason that all of our players just seem to be a bit more confident than they were last year?
I think it's bravery. I think that's the word that I would bring it down to. And that comes with confidence, obviously. That's not a brand new idea. But what it is, the way we're playing requires bravery. You need these players to find the spaces, make the runs. And if you're low on confidence, sometimes you don't want to make a mistake, especially attacking players. Because if you realise you make those mistakes and it turns right back again, and then you're going to a defence who's low on confidence, you know, the goals are trickling in. We know we're not really a strong defensive unit. So what that means is there's an onus on the strikers. They need to make things happen, especially in build-up and in our creative phases. We need to make sure that we're sure of our passes. We don't give away the ball sloppily, because we can get exposed on the counter-attack. There was a couple of moments in the Huddersfield game. Now, I can't remember his name. Welsh guy. I think he was a winger for Huddersfield. Do you know his name?
Sorbus Thomas, I think so.
Yeah. He was the one player for Huddersfield that I noticed was really good on the break. Really forward-thinking, trying to get the ball moving as quick as possible. And he caused us a few problems on the break. But I don't think our players are concerned about making mistakes, trying things. I noticed, especially in our passages of play, how an underlap on the back heel comes a lot more into the way that we try and find space, which is lovely to watch because we never saw that in the Premier League. The confidence for someone to put their back to a player, see the run, the underlapping run, and just to roll it so it goes into their stride, and suddenly you've got a player on the edge of the box, the ball in front of his feet, he can put a ball through, he can take a shot. I mean, Will Smallbone just having a shot from 25 yards, I don't mind that at all. And in fact, he tests the keeper. He got a bit of dip on it. The keeper had to put one hand out. And my initial reaction was, God, keeper's made a mess of that. But it's a shot from 25 yards. And I'm pretty sure we got a corner from it straight after. It's that bravery the players have now. They're not afraid to have a go and maybe give away the ball. But they know that there'll be other chances where that pays off and we'll get a goal from it. So returning to my original point, I think the way we're playing is showing that bravery, really.
Yeah, I almost feel that they believe that Russell Martin will take any mistake and he'll take the blame for it almost. Okay, look, I've told them to play this way. I want them to play without fear. I want them to play with confidence. If they make a mistake, that's completely on me. I think there was when Sulemana tried a nutmeg against Millwall in their own box and then switched the play or something like that. I think Russell Martin was clapping it as everyone else, they had their hearts in their mouths. Mm. But we talked about Stuart Armstrong. We've talked plenty of times about Adam Armstrong as well. That's 10 goals for the season. But we've only gone in at half-time, 1-0 up. A 1.3 XG probably says that we've done maybe exactly what we could have done, but we didn't quite show the clinical edge. And I think Russell Martin at the end of the game sort of compared the match overall to the one against Rotherham, where we were 1-0 up after a goal in the first half. Stuart Armstrong scored, I think, after 2 minutes in that one. And we weren't able to build on it in the second half. Do you think that could be the big difference between us pushing for the playoffs? You know, look at Ipswich, even though they've only won 1-4. You look at Leicester City recovering from a couple of defeats to beat Watford 2-0 and maybe being in the playoffs.
Yeah, it, like you said, it's happened a couple of times now. And it's not the end of the world because it keeps us unbeaten. It keeps us continuing to put points on the table, which for especially promotion, it keeps that momentum. So it's not the end of the world, but it's a separator in quality. And I know you said there are teams around us are dropping points. I think, Ipswich lost to West Brom, that's correct, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. So that was a big result for me, looking elsewhere. Now, I don't like to look at the table this early on in the season, but it seemed like Ipswich continued to put on amazing form, considering their squad and where they were last season and where they are now. It's a really impressive start to the season. I think, how long can they keep this up for? You look at that and you think, we are continuing to put points on the board. That is the most important thing. But especially with Rotherham, you looked at it and thought, there's an opportunity there. We could have killed the game off. And it's that frustration there, because you don't want to be coming to the end of the season going, 2 points there, 2 points there, and look where we could have been. That's where you kick yourself. And will we, in 10 games time, 20 games time, look at it and think, that was a real opportunity missed? We won't have easier times this season to pick up points, because we've got 3 games in 7 days coming up soon, all over through December. I don't want to say it, but imagine if things happen to the squad that are out of our control, things like injuries, potential January interest. And then suddenly think, oh, we had a really strong score before Christmas and we should have been putting those points away. So, yeah, I don't want to look back and kind of regret those chances that we have. So let's hope there's something we can change in the mentality, if there's a way that we can push on for a second straight away while we can. Because I think I get too touchy when we're holding on to these 1-0s, and I want to see that second goal just to kind of have that that sigh of relief.
Yeah, I mean, I'd reflect on the second half, but there wasn't really too much to look at. 9 shots for them, just 4 for us with 1 on target. Mm. And there's a couple of little different talking points before we go on to the whole pre-match press conference, post-match press conference, I should say. But like you mentioned earlier, Sulemana comes off after 55 minutes. And after the game, Russell Martin said, "Kamaldeen has been managed over the break. He didn't train for the whole week. I've spoken to Kamaldeen about it. He has to become more robust in his performance. We spoke about it at halftime and I didn't see it in the second half." Mm. What did you make of that reflection? Because it seemed like Kamaldeen himself, he wasn't happy going straight down the tunnel.
Yeah. He does also have his knee strapped up, doesn't he? A lot. I don't know which knee it is, left or right, but one of them has a lot of black supporting tape around it. So that might make sense why he wasn't training in the week. But what I do like from the manager is that he said at halftime, "This is what I'm not happy with. This is what you're not doing. I will give you time to try and do it. And if you're not, then I will bring someone on who will do it." And that's what he did. You can see, when did he come off? 50, 55? I don't have the number in front of me.
Yeah, 55. Around that,
yeah, 55. Okay, you've got 10 minutes to show me that you can do it. If you're not, then you come off and we'll get someone else who can. Because, and even if Russell Martin's not on the sidelines, and that's something that I do want to talk about a little bit later, because did that have an impact in the second half? I think it did. He still got that message across, and 10 minutes later, a different player came on. I think, yeah, he probably wasn't very happy about it. But just because you're our most expensive signing, just because you're a very talented youngster, doesn't mean you're guaranteed 90 minutes in this side. There are young players, there are good players that are sat on the bench that can come into the game and affect it. And we know what he can do. And when he shows his quality, he stays in the team and can be one of our most dangerous players. But if he's not making an effect on the game, then let's get a substitute on who can make a difference.
Do you think a lot of that does come down to maybe him still being a relatively inexperienced player? I mean, the Saints YouTube channel did a brilliant interview of him. I think it was like 6 or 7 minutes long, but it seems like he's really enjoying his football in the championship this season. But sometimes just games aren't suited to certain players, and it didn't seem like he was having the electric impact that he normally does. And that may be a big reason that he's getting frustrated. Things aren't quite working out for him. And hopefully now he knows that if he wants to play on Wednesday, he's got to have a good couple of days of training.
Yeah. And I think it puts that fire in his belly a little bit. I think he was still relatively effective in what he did, but it just wasn't his game to make a difference in, really. I think the main thing that he does is he can knock the ball past, get past the player. Player has to really go in and try and catch up with him because his acceleration is rapid. And then he cuts back and then finds the pass. And he did that a few times. And I thought he's made the space and he's got the ball in, which is what we wanted to see. But whether it's the final delivery, if it wasn't quite finding someone, it just wasn't his day. And there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you have, I remember Nathan Teller when he was playing for us, everyone's saying how much we miss him, but he had a couple of games where he didn't make an effect on the game. That's someone who's now top of the Bundesliga, and everyone's saying, "Oh, we shouldn't have let him go. You know, that's 20 million is nothing for who he is and all of this." So, yeah, so some wingers just don't. It's not their day at the office, but I think it's how they react and how they do the performance the next time, how they kind of show that they can do it. And it's that consistency over the whole season, which I think really makes or breaks a winger, not just one bad day in the office.
Well, Huddersfield had a couple of half chances in the start of the second period, but they weren't creating too much. But the stadium, and this is probably the most important thing, the stadium started to get up. They started to believe after what was probably quite a dire first half for the home fans. And it didn't quite seem like we were able to change the momentum whatsoever. We didn't make any more subs after the Sulemana one until the 80th minute. Are you surprised that Martin didn't want to alter the game whatsoever? I guess if you've got a 1-0 lead and you're relatively happy with what's going on, even though it didn't seem like he was, you don't really want to change a winning, rigid structure. But then if you're not moving further in the game, you're not creating the chances that we did in the first, you almost want people in the second that are going to come off the bench to show why they should be starting.
Yeah. Is it proactive or is it reactive? I think that's what you've got to look at. And he might be thinking, the players that I've got on the pitch are the strongest I have at the moment. I have a faith in how they're playing, so I want to keep them on. That's the manager's call, and we've praised the manager's call throughout the season. So I'm happy with his decisions at the moment. I don't think it was a massive oversight, but you could see the game was starting to fall out of our control. And that's fine when we're, if it's a 1-0 and we're in control of the game, that's fine. But it's very, very unlikely. Dean Hammond was saying it on the commentary on the iPlayer. I follow, not iPlayer. That's BBC. And he was saying, you cannot control a game for 90 minutes. You have phases of play where you have controlling periods and then you have some periods where you're recovering or the opposition has the possession and they're putting on the pressure. And that happened, but we didn't really get it back in the second half. Huddersfield had strong moments of pressure and then they had slightly less ones, but we were on the back foot. And yeah, I do wonder, maybe a little bit of early substitutions, hindsight, beautiful thing. But yeah, would it have slightly just nullified them a little bit to try and find a break in that pressure? Because we were under the cosh a little bit. We didn't play our game and we let Huddersfield come onto us, which is something I didn't like because I hated seeing that in the Prem. The fact that stat that always used to come up and say points lost from winning positions. That's what we always used to do. We always used to drop off after one, being scared of committing and getting a second. And I thought that's something we won't see under Russell Martin. I really hope we don't see it from now on and we go and kill games at 2-3 nil because I've seen it for far too many seasons, us throw away 1-0 leads. I don't want to see it anymore.
Well, something you mentioned earlier, Russell Martin was in the stands. And do you think those 2 points could possibly interlink the fact that we started to slowly come away from the Russell Martin start? And he said that he was very angry, basically, at full time. And I don't think I've really seen him really frustrated yet, apart from the Gillingham game where we lost 3-1. Even when we lost 4-1 to Leicester and everyone was kicking off left, right and centre, he could see the positives. He could see that we were moving in the right direction. But on this occasion, he's told the players he's not happy and he wants to see a reaction on Wednesday. It almost feels, and I know we're going back to the secondary school routes for the third time, it's almost like when you get a cover teacher and your other teacher's not quite in the classroom. They'll hear about it later, but because they're not actually right there, some students can feel like they can misbehave, not do the right thing. Yeah. Is that almost the same situation here?
Yeah, and they've been mucking around and then suddenly the teacher from next door comes in and you go, oh, God, okay, here it comes kind of thing. Monday morning, they're going to be running laps because they could have done better. And, yeah, I think Russell Martin might take it out on them on Monday. So, this should be called, like, the secondary school episode or something like that. Really confusing. I'm sure you can think of a football-related pun for it. How's that? Going back to your point, I think we will see a difference in the midweek game. I don't think he's like the craziest on the sideline. I mean, I've definitely seen, who was the one a couple of games ago? He was it the West Brom manager? He was up and flapping around.
Carlos Corbrahan, yeah.
Yeah, he loves jumping up and crazy. Down. He was all over the place. So he's definitely not like that. He is a little bit more calm, but his style, the complexities to the way that he wants to play, it needs tweaking, it needs reminding. And I think him seeing the players on the side, their mentalities up and close, I think does make a difference. And I was interested because I was thinking very possession-based football, a lot of intricate tactics. Maybe it might be better for him to be a few, seats up and he can kind of see the wider pitch and he might be able to radio down whoever's on the side and kind of control it like a chess player maybe and make all the moves. But I don't think it worked. I think we got the mentality wrong. And I think the players needed that manager on the sideline to kind of fight in their corner as well, because I do think the manager does have a massive impact on the game, even if it's just getting in the fourth official's ear and saying, we've had 5 decisions that have gone our way here. I think the manager talk, like the players talking through the manager or the captain is a real important thing. And we didn't really have our representation on the side, which again kind of took the game out of our hands a little bit. So, yeah, I think we did miss him. I think it will be interesting to see how that differs in the Bristol City game and maybe see how that works for our advantage. But, yeah, I mentioned it earlier and I'll mention it now. I think we did miss him on the sidelines.
Yeah, we'll get on to the Bristol City game very soon. But something that I wanted to bring up is the way that we're conceding goals. You look at this one, it's probably quite a fortunate cross shot. I mean, it's a brilliant ball into the box. It asks plenty of questions. And if someone doesn't get on the end of it, it ends up in the back of the net. I mean, that's a perfect cross in my book. But something you could also see is quite fortunate. And you look at the other goals that we've conceded recently against West Brom, cross into the box, deflects off the bar, and Bartley's there to tap in against Birmingham City. After a short break, a long hoof ball forward, Stansfield controls it well after Carl Walker-Peters mistakenly finishes brilliantly. Look at the Rotherham game, a long break, a hoof up the pitch. Bazuna gets caught off his line and Hugh Gill chips him quite wonderfully, really. But you look at all of those goals and there's not a point where I've really thought we've been unpicked and it's a really good finish or a really good goal. It's just little bits of misfortune going against us or maybe us not focusing at the right moments. Do you see that as advantageous, that once we start to really get into the nuts and bolts of the season and hopefully we focus more, we won't be conceding those sorts of goals? Or do you see it as a negative in terms of that sort of just what happens in the Championship? If you're not going to be focused, if you even have a moment's rest, there's a good chance that you're going to concede.
Yeah, I think their lapses of concentration aren't good enough. I think players should be switched on for the whole 90 minutes. I'm not saying that every single second, obviously, if the ball's out of play and someone's down, then you don't have to be on the spot jogging or something. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying when the ball's playing and you're doing your job, you should be switched on and you should be ready. And you get punished when you don't. That's as simple as it goes. But I think what we try and do is we try and limit the opposition to tough chances. We push them out as wide as possible. We restrict the space. We compact the middle when we're defending. We sit in a tough 4-4-2 block. When the opposition has control possession, we sit in narrow and tight so they can't get into the danger areas. And like you said, their goals there, it's a big chip. And the reason that got punished is because Bazuna is constantly off his line. And overall, in the majority of chances that create, that's advantageous to us. That's a benefit because there's a few times when he was really quick off his line and he made a sliding challenge about 5 yards away from the semicircle in the middle. That's where the benefit comes from. And sometimes it gets punished with a chip. I always remember Schmeichel in the 90s. Well, I wasn't there in the 90s, but I watched clips and stuff. But he was always really far off his line. And sometimes he got dinked. If you remember Matt Letiz dinking him on the edge of the box. But overall, what it did was it restricted the space. It closed the angles. He was quick off his line. And people play sweeper keepers now because 9 out of 10 times it's a benefit to do that. And sometimes you'll get caught out on the 1 out of 10. And yeah, like you said there, we've restricted the space out wide. It's a bit of a narrow angle from across. Yes, it's an in-swinger, but you think keeper quick off his line, he can grab it if it's not a perfect ball. But what it was an absolute beauty of a cross. Like you said, he's whipped it in, and if anything gets a touch on it, then it might go in the back of the net and go the wrong way and wrong step Bazunu. Or it whips in the back corner. Keeper thinks it's not going to come round, but it takes that bounce, slips off the surface and goes in the back of the net. So it's a beautiful cross, and we've conceded a lovely little dink as well. It's just a tiny moment of quality that we've allowed them to have, because the majority of the game, it's worked for us to have a high line. It's worked for us to be a keeper off his line. And sometimes we get caught out, but as long as we reduce the amount of time that we're not concentrating and the players are switched on the whole time and we give them the poorer opportunities, we don't allow them down the middle, I think it will work out for us. But I think it's just making sure we remain switched on and we reduce the goals in that way.
Now, I was going to move on to the Bristol City game, but I've got one more question that's just come to mind. And it's maybe a talking point that I really wasn't expecting to be so prominent, but it's another game where we've decided to take off Bree and put on Ryan Manning with 10 or 15 minutes to go. A lot of people haven't been a fan of that substitution. I just want to know what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I think Ryan Manning for the first 5 games of the season was one of my favourites. I think he knew exactly how Russell Martin wanted to play. And I think he's been caught up a little bit in the fact that the other players now know the system. They now know how they want to play. I don't really think he's stuck out as much. I think he was such an important player in Russell Martin's previous season. But there's been other players who have now come in and shown their quality as well. I think the reason why we know Ryan Manning is coming on is because of his goal involvements. I mean, for a left back, he's extremely attacking, and some people have maybe questioned his defensive abilities, but his attacking abilities I don't think can be questioned, because how many goals and how many assists did he get last season? He's very involved in tackling play, and I think Bree can put an excellent cross in, but when it, in terms of getting on the ball and making things happen, playing a 1-2, does he overlap, does he underlap? I think Ryan Manning's slightly better on the ball, can find a little bit of a better pass, and he can apply that pressure. And we knew we needed to get on possession and try and break Huddersfield down with continued moment of possession, which is what we normally have during the game. And I think Ryan Manning is a little bit better suited for that. So I think it makes sense. I can understand what he was trying to do. Did it come off? You might say no, but I think the idea is there and we can kind of see what he's doing. So there might be some people questioning it, saying it's not working, but I think we understand the reasoning for it.
Now, let's move on to Bristol City, where you currently reside, but this game is at St Mary's. They just won a recent game, 3-2. They're around the middle of the table, 11th place, 7 wins this season, 6 losses, 4 draws, 25 points. They started the season with Nigel Pearce, and now they've got former Oxford City boss Liam Manning in the hot seat. What do you think about this game coming up? Is it a good chance to quickly change our fortunes? Yes, we've got a point on Saturday. It wasn't a great performance, but we'll quickly show the fans and the rest of the people in the Championship that we can get back to business and take 3 points.
Yeah, first of all, I've got to shout out the two people who were sat next to me at the careers fair, which was a Bristol Rovers talent scheme. And I was in the southeast of Bristol, which is not Bristol Rovers territory. And that guy had an absolute grilling from 5 years of secondary schools for the whole day. The poor bloke was getting absolute rinsed. Kids were picking up the perspective and going, oh, fantastic, I needed some new toilet paper. And I was thinking, oh my God, this poor bloke. I don't know who signed him up for this careers fair, but yeah, he had an absolute rough time. I can't remember that gent's name, but yeah. I'm sorry, mate. I hope you had a good evening, because you did not have a good day. but yeah, getting back to Bristol City, you'd think I'd know about them, wouldn't you? Because I live in the city and you might think I'd know something about them, but I really don't. They seem a very kind of mid-table side. I saw a stat online and this person collated all the things from Opta with the most for each team. So if you looked up the most on Opta, what came up? And for us, you could probably guess it, the most amount of passes. For Leicester, it was like the most amount of counter-attacks. For Rotherham, it was like most goals conceded. And Millwall, it was most headers won. And you're like, oh, okay, this makes fairly sense. So I was like, oh, what's Bristol City's? And it was like the most players with the first name John or something. And I think that really sums up Bristol City. They've just kind of not really, they're just kind of mid-table, not really, never really a promotion push, never really a relegation fodder. They're just kind of there. And I do kind of look out for their results, because they're in the same league as us and they're in the same city as me. So yeah, I kind of check the results now and again and see what they're up to, but never too high, never too low with Bristol City. That's kind of as much as I can say. Do I know what's going to happen? Absolutely not. I mean, I don't. Do you know any of their key players that they have in the side?
I know a couple of them. I know they used to have Andreas Weimann, who was a good striker back in the day, but their current squad has sort of eluded me. I mean, they've got Taylor Garner-Hickman that seems like a good little player. But apart from that, I don't know. I'm similar to you. I don't have a lot of thoughts around them. But we'll stick to the Reds of Saints rather than that of Bristol City. Yeah. And normally, from the last couple of weeks, I've asked you the same question. Would you make any changes? And you go, no, we don't change a winning team. Well, it's not a winning team anymore, Ollie. It's a drawing team. So would you keep Fraser in? Would you put Alcaraz in after the international break? He didn't play a part. And I guess that's quite a big talking point that we may have missed in the last game, that he was on the bench but didn't have the chance to make an impact. So would you bring him in? Would the defence change at all? What would you want to do?
I wouldn't change the defence. I'm pretty happy with where we are set defence-wise. I like Ryan Fraser coming off the bench. And I don't think he possibly had a bad enough result to get dropped. But I think he just works well. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I think what he was doing is fantastic. Maybe he deserves another chance at the starting 11, because he didn't have a particularly poor game against Huddersfield. But there's part of me thinking, I just like how he plays when he comes off. I think Adozie looked quite sharp when he came on as well. And the combination of those two working really well, but I'd like to see, I just want to see Fraser come off the bench again. That sounds really strange because you think if he's a good player and he's really dangerous that you'd want him to play the whole 90. But I like that dynamic, that bit of excitement, the kind of the late man who comes in and saves the day. It kind of works as a dynamic. I think it's someone who he could, that could be his benefit to the team. But I think Alcaraz, like you mentioned as well, a real player of quality that we know needs to be in the side. And if he's fitness requiring, if he's recovered from international duty and we know we can get him in the side, I think, again, it's someone that should be included. But yeah, for me, I think Alcaraz coming in, I think would be a good idea. I think maybe mixing up the Ryan Fraser side, and I think keeping Ben Rackin as well would be a solid choice as well. And I know Manning's had a couple of substitution appearances, but I still think keep that back four solid, keep those players learning with each other, and keeping it not too many changes around there. I think it's sensible, especially with defense, kind of build that understanding. Maybe a couple, but I wouldn't do any more.
Yeah, I like the Ryan Fraser shout. I think he's so important for us off the bench because I almost feel like he feels that he's got something to prove, or that he wants to be the guy that comes off the bench, makes the impact and almost gets all the plaudits at the end of the day. Whereas if he starts the game, his point's already been proven that he should be starting. So he doesn't really have that inner fight to go, yeah, I want to come off the bench and make an impact. I mean, that could be complete rubbish. He might have just had a really quiet game against Huddersfield and it'll be brilliant in the next match. But I'm the same as you. I want Alcaraz to come into the team. Fraser, once again, he's great off the bench. Stewart, I think there's still another 1 or 2 weeks until he can make his first start. But Adam Armstrong's still getting the goal, so we don't need a fresh striker. And I think the midfield should probably stay the same as well. And because we've got to also talk about Cardiff City, that's all we're going to talk about with Bristol City. Ollie, Southampton versus Bristol City. What is your score prediction?
Oh, I think 2-1 Saints. Sorry, Bristol. There might be some sad faces when I'm walking around on Saturday, but I'll be a happy boy. But I'll wear my Saints shirt with pride on Saturday. So, yeah, I'm hoping that Saints will reward my bravery wearing that in Bristol with a 2-1 win.
Do you know what? I'm going to go for 2-0. They haven't won away from home since the start of October, and that was against Rotherham as well. I think we're going to bounce back. We're going to get a clean sheet to our name. And I fancy a Carlos Alcaraz goal as well. Now, the final game that we're going to cover in this episode, it's another home one, so maybe, hopefully, back-to-back home wins, or maybe quite a few on the bounce at this point if we beat Bristol City. It's Cardiff City. They're a bit higher up in the table. They've had quite a good start to the season. 7th, 8 wins, only 2 points above Bristol City, though, so that probably shows how compact the table is so far. Ollie, what are your thoughts?
I don't know anything about them. I just had a look at their manager. Don't know him. Top goal scorer. Don't know him. Highest rated players. I don't know them. I really don't. So I'm sorry, Cardiff. If there's any people who's second team of Cardiff, I don't know. It's got to that point now that my football knowledge doesn't really extend to lower-ish side championship. It's kind of hard for me to comment, to be honest. But we're at home. The way I'm looking at it is we've got the quality. Do I think we do it? I feel confident now. It's weird to have this confidence at home. I feel like the fans aren't as nervous, as apprehensive as we used to be before. I think they know that once we're in control of the game, there's a likelihood that we'll show that and we'll come out with a result. And I think there's an ease a little bit around the stadium now. So I hope we carry that on against Bristol. And I think Cardiff are playing West Brom tomorrow, which will be a big game. It will, you know, we know what West Brom's quality is like. We can judge that up against Cardiff and see how that difference is up. Because, yeah, like you say, that kind of 4th to 10th spot at the moment is really flexible. There's not many points in it at all. So I think we're going to see the real difference in size, where the quality is and who's going to make that promotion push and playoff push kind of around the new year, I reckon. Once all these Christmas games are done, you'll kind of see not only who's looking good, but who's got the quality in their squads as well. Will it be West Brom? Will it be Cardiff? Will it be Southampton? I don't know. But yeah, I'll be keeping a close eye on that Cardiff West Brom game tomorrow to kind of really make my mind up on them.
And a common theme probably for the rest of this year, the December period especially, is how important will our squad depth be and how much do you think Russell Martin will use it? Once again, 3 games in 7 days. And if you look at our midfield, for example, Smallbone's come off a couple of times with a bit of a knock. We know Stuart Armstrong struggled at times. Flynn Downes looks like he can play every minute of every game after that bit of food poisoning, so he might be different. But do you think this will give the chance for the likes of Shay Charles, someone that was, you know, a man of the match against Plymouth near the start of the season but hasn't really been able to get a good opportunity in the side? Will this be a really important period for them to try and fight their way into a team that's doing really well at the moment?
Yeah, and they're still getting minutes. I think it's an exciting player to see off the bench because you think, oh, he was signed to kind of be the Lavia replacement. I think they looked pretty much identical in the way that they were lined up, came from the City Academy, play possession football. Okay, slightly different building in the way they play. Fun fact, you know, Shay Charles has got the most interceptions in Europe. Qualifiers or something like that on the international thing in Europe. I'll see if I can find the actual stat and not just butcher it off the top of my head. But yeah, he kind of stuck out for like the most interceptions. Maybe that's because internationally he's doing a lot of work in the midfield. But I know his the fans love him over there, and they want to see him get involved more with Southampton because he's not really getting the minutes that he was promised. But It might be the chance for him in this period. Like you say, we know he's a quality player and he can put the results, the performances in and get the results out as well. So it's an exciting player to see. It's not like, oh no, if Flynn Downes gets injured, we're scuppered. We're not. We've got a good player there who's ready to go and got something to prove, which is great to have that kind of, yeah, have that player, that motivation to come in and make a difference and go. The manager rewards players who put in good performances. Look at James Bree. He was held out the side. He looked like he had no place in Southampton for quite a while. And then he's played games back to back because he's been playing well and he's consistently playing well. So he stays in the side. So it's a nice motivation. It's an advertisement to other players. Play well, take your opportunity and you'll stay in the side. So yeah, I'm excited. I've mentioned so many times the quality that we have compared to other sides in this league. We should be using it to our advantage. And I think we will. I think it will pay off in the long run.
So, Southampton versus Cardiff City. Ollie, what's your score prediction?
Oh, 2-0. I think clean sheet. I think Bristol City might be a little bit more of an open game. I think Cardiff, I back ourselves for absolutely no basis whatsoever. If there's any Cardiff fans watching this, I don't know. This is purely from the gut, from the heart. I'm just chucking it out of nowhere, but I think we'll win 2-0.
See, this is what you get from this podcast. A lot of the time when Mikey was here, you got facts left, right and centre. Right now, it's just honesty.
It's just vibes, pure vibes.
Hopefully, when we're back in the Premier League next season, we can give you a better view of every single team. But when we're playing Cardiff and Bristol City, maybe it's a bit tougher. But we'll do our best to be as educated as possible. For me, I'll go for a 3-1 victory. I think after a long week for both sides, our quality, our squad depth will prevail. I think they will get a goal, but it'll be, a third 3-1 home victory. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week's episode of the podcast. We had a look at Southampton's 1-1 draw with Huddersfield, where Adam Armstrong scored his 10th goal of the season and Sulemana came off earlier than he was probably hoping. We also previewed back-to-back home games against Bristol City and Cardiff City as well. Hopefully we can get 6 points from those two games. My name's been Harry Tizard and I've been joined by Ollie Boast.
Thank you very much for listening.
On next week's podcast, hopefully we will be reviewing back-to-back home wins before previewing an away trip against Watford. We'll see you then.